was love in this land. I'm sure all would agree that his misery was his woman and things. Now Fred is dead. That's what I say.
Trev's dead. It's the Day Trippers. Trev's dead again, and Phil can barely talk after a weekend of debauchery in Cologne. So tonight the Trippers are back and I'm hosting it. Yes, it's not Niall Quinn, but I will happily advertise Daz if Lever pay me enough. It's me, Steve O'Daly, friend to no one on Twitter because basically I hate all you Twitter fucks. Joining me tonight in the Bikram Yoga Palace of Bunk Air is the notorious Paulie B, Der Führer Wilhelm II, Scouts Mariachi Merchant Ray Brady, and Pod Debutante Dave O'Connell. So welcome along to this week's Day Trippers. On tonight's pod, we have a match. Yes, a match to talk about. We will cover the Sterling exit. Right. First up, Phil went over to Germany and managed to sit down with Jeremy Dow in Cologne. He chatted at length about the work of the agent and how far they would be prepared to push a deal with a client. They also get sidetracked and talk German goalkeeping, as Phil loves to do, and the strength of the academy system in Germany, including the work of insoccer.de, which they carry out with young talent. Have a listen.
Okay, so I'm fortunate and happy enough to be joined by Jeremy here, who's a football agent with Jens Novotny's In Soccer team. It's good to have him on board, and it's good to get an opinion of an agent, because at this moment of time the guys have a really bad rep in England with the stuff that's going on with Sterling and Eddie Roach, Eddie Ward and all that type of stuff. So Jeremy, you aren't really the devil, are you?
No draw left to start for sure. No, not at all. Obviously, just like in any business, in any walk of life, there's good people and bad people. And in my business, I'd certainly consider myself to be a good one. It's all down to the motivation that drives decisions for agents. You know, and some are driven by the money, and some are driven by, let's say, the glory of being at a big club, you know, and being in the stands watching their client play. And others are driven, and I would imagine that's in the minority, driven by the idea of what is the best for the development of my client in the long term. Because at the end of the day, any professional football player between the ages, let's say, 23 and about 29 to 31, they have to be making the most amount of money possible in that short window, because you never know what's going to come down the road for injury. And certainly most players aren't playing at a high level past 32, 33. So, you know, they need to maximize their economic return for their input from a sportive sense of things. So, you know, at the end of the day, if the motivation is correct, and if the decisions are made in a decent way regarding what's important for the future of the client, then normally it should work out. If that's done in a positive way. So I'd like to say I'm not the devil. we provide very, very solid decision-making advice for our clients, but at the end of the day, it's also down to the client too. And sometimes, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but they're not always going to drink the water you're giving them.
And that's what I'm trying to get to, is how much of it is client-driven and how much is, you know, agent-driven. Because when somebody looks at, say, the Sterling, or even Skirtle, when he was making his press statements around wanting a new deal and not getting enough money and all that type of things, how much of that gets driven by the player himself? Like, are you driven by the player, or are you driven by your own interests when it comes to being a player's agent?
It's definitely player driven. In the case of here in Germany, there are significantly more agents in the market than there are in England or Spain or Italy or France. So there's so much competition that the players hear so much from various agents that it applies pressure on you as an agent for your clients, because, you know, your clients can jump ship at any time. And I think to a large degree, it is down to client interest. But if you give your clients in the early days, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18 to 19 in the youth days, if you give them the right advice, and if they have a good family at home, good parents who have raised them properly, then they'll realize that it's not about making $100 now. It's about making, you know, $10,000 two years down the road. So I think that in one hand, it is client-driven to the point that certain clients will insist that they want something, and you may know in your head, in your heart, that it's not the right decision, but you know, you have to respect the decisions of your clients. And then from the other side, sometimes your clients are smart enough to listen to the advice that you're giving them, and not that they have to listen to what you say, but oftentimes, you know, we've been there, done that sort of thing, and we've seen this story before, so it's normally based on experience. So yeah, I'd say we're probably at about 50-50 in that range, and that oftentimes it does come from the client, but then fortunately, you know, frequently enough, it's also coming from our side, from the agent side.
Okay, when I look at these type of things, you know, there's a lot of anger, there's a lot of outbursts, particularly around when anybody's negotiating a deal. Look at Schweini going to United today. So you know, everyone is looking and saying, what's going on? How come Bayern Munich couldn't keep one of their main players in their club, etc., etc.? Right? How much does that, when you look at it, when you go into negotiations, or you want to talk to a club or whatever, how much does wanting to keep them there drive what you have to do? Or does that even come into the equation?
It's so rare nowadays to see a player spend his entire career at one club, so it's not surprising that Schweinsteiger ends up taking that move. And with that specific example in mind as well, you know, you've also got Alonso there in the hole, who isn't as well the fastest player in the world. So it was almost like that club was too big for the both of them to be in, or better said, both of those profiles are too large to be in the same club. Mm. I think at the end of the day, when you look at something like Schweinsteiger's deal, I think that you know, Manchester United is also a very traditional club in England. It is almost, you could liken it to a Liverpool deal, let's say. And I think that after winning the World Cup and winning the Champions League and all that type of stuff, I think that I could understand that he wants to take a, you know, a foreign journey with his career at age 30.
Very similar to Pep himself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm very certain that Schweinsteiger will be successful. If he's not, I'll be shocked. You know, and it is football. I could be completely wrong, and maybe he's a complete bust. But I think that I'm not really surprised by a deal like that. And I've seen it with other clubs and with other clients, so it hasn't shocked me. And certainly he'll improve the United side for 100%. So I'm sure that that'll work out for both sides.
So one of the questions I have to ask, and one of the ones that I'm sure that all the listeners will be asking, how far would you push a deal? So when I say how far, like, we're looking at the Sterling thing, we looked at Suarez because he did his interviews in the press and everything like that. How far would you push the client? Like, would you push it to the point of no return?
Well, if the client really wants a deal, then I'd push it as much as he wanted me to. But you have to remember as well that if you push a player into a club to that level, to really, really push him aggressively in the club, and to push the club to make the right offer for your client, then it also gives the club the indication that you don't have other deals on the table. Mm. And so if you come off as too desperate, you know, you're generally losing 20-40% of the financial offer, whereas if the club's coming to you because they have interest in it, then that's a different story. So I would certainly push my clients to a certain extent. If it's a really, really good fit and you know from a footballing standpoint that they would play, then fine, I would do it. But otherwise, I wouldn't push it too much. A good example of that would be with Mesut Ozil when he left Schalke U23. Coming out of the U19, Norbert Elgert, who's one of the best youth trainers in the world from the U19 in Schalke, told Mesut Ozil himself, take the offer to go to Werder Bremen, because in Werder you will play. And here this year with the first team in Schalke, you will probably not play, and you will probably stay with the U23. Whereas at U23, integration in Germany is excellent, and for a lot of players it's worked quite well. For Ozil, he just had an opportunity to play for the first team. So I know for a fact that Reza Fazili, his agent, pushed that quite a bit in order to get him to go. Yeah. And obviously it worked out quite well for him in the long term. He also made his Real Madrid deal as well. So, if I really think that it's worth it and it is really what the client wants, I will push it. I will definitely push it to a certain extent. Obviously, sometimes you have clients at the club yourself and you can use your current clients, you know, is a bit of a leverage point as well. But it's also important as well to keep a good club relationship because down the road you'll have more clients and you want to make sure that the clubs can trust you and know that you make your judgments on, you know, a good basis.
I've got to ask, because it is seen as a conveyor belt of talent now, especially in England, because, you know, the clubs have only opened up to the idea of bringing Bundesliga players in.
Correct.
Who... You know, there's the obvious. There's Max Meyer, there's Julian Draxler, there's all these kids that are coming through, but the layer behind that, you know, that isn't that where you guys are in terms of what's going on?
We are ourselves right now with our company. I mean, we're one of the strongest players in the U20 World Cup in New Zealand, Robert Bauer, who's kicking on right now with Ingolstadt in the first team, and there are other clubs in the first Bundesliga interested in him. Your U21s were very strong. Karim Derenbai, who didn't even play all matches, is an excellent talent. You've got a whole host of players that are really, really strong. There are certainly some really interesting talents between the U20 and the U21. And, I mean, both of those teams had a host of second Bundesliga and first Bundesliga starters. And that's just part of the German culture. It is a conveyor belt. And at every year group, even from the U19 up, you've got Bundesliga starters. You know, and certainly in the U19s, they beat Netherlands 1-0 last night. You've got Max Christensen also at Ingolstadt, is now a first Bundesliga player. And there's just a lot of youth talent. The youth development in Germany is second to none in the world at the moment. It's, in my opinion, head and shoulders above the rest. I think in the next 5 to 6 years, you're going to see a continuous amount of yearly German talent that is being noticed, that has certainly been on the radar in Germany for years. But again, as you said, it's just starting to get picked up on the radar of other major leagues like the Premier League.
One of my own hobby horses are goalkeepers. You have incredibly strong goalkeepers over here.
Yeah.
So around the coaching, because I know Jens, the, you know, would have been back in his day, you know, a big player in the Bundesliga. But the coaching around goalkeepers just seems phenomenal. Is there speciality coaching from an early age with these guys? Because I'm looking at Kevin Trapp going to PSG. I'm looking at Timo Horn coming through, coming through at Cologne. I'm looking at the guys, even Mitch Langerak going off to Stuttgart to make his own career.
Yeah,
he's
correct.
Come over and he's come through the BVB system and the whole lot. And even, who's the guy?
You're looking at Ter Stegen, for example, starting, yeah. You know, I mean, that's the Euro U21 championships. And Ter Stegen started all matches for Barcelona in the Champions League and in the Spanish Cup this year. And I don't think he lost a match in Spain this year. He's excellent. There's a conveyor belt of goalkeepers in Germany. And obviously part of it is down to the fact that this area of Europe has the tallest human beings in the world. You know, the Dutch are the tallest nation in the world, and the Germans aren't far behind them. I don't know what it is. It's something in the bratwurst that they eat or whatever.
The currywurst,
yeah. There's something that's genetically there that just, they're just super species with regard to their size. But obviously, you know, it's not just about talent, it's about the coaching, and there's just some really good schools. And in the case, then I go back to Norbert Elgert at Schalke, who worked wonders, you know, as a regular coach with Manuel Neuer and brought him through the ranks at Schalke before he made his change to Bayern Munich. And I think that there are just a couple of really special coaches around Germany that really, really know what they're doing. And you can even go back. You're looking at, for example, World Cup USA 94. You had Andreas Köpke, and two goalkeepers behind him was third stringer Oliver Kahn, you know. Then obviously he broke through and had his career as well. And it's just year after year after year, there are German goalkeepers that come in, and I'm often, as an agent from Canada, asked to bring North American goalkeepers into the German market, into the youth, and unless they're the best thing since sliced bread that I've ever seen come from across the pond, I'm just not going to do it, because bringing a goalkeeper to Germany simply scares me. It's just not worth it. It's all work and very little return, because there's just too many talents here, and it's just better off from my standpoint to work with German goalkeepers.
Oh yeah, listen, it was a loaded question, because I'm a massive fan of German goalkeepers. But however, one very last question. It is, if you get stuck into negotiations with Liverpool someday, who's the player we're going to be watching playing at Anfield? Because we have Bobby Firmino now, we have Emre Can.
Yeah. And Emre Can's a very local boy, Dusseldorf boy here, and came through the ranks. Certainly broke in very well.
He's an animal.
In Liverpool, and I know he's liked. At first, sort of took the time to get to like him, and I think at Liverpool he's played a bit of center half, but I know he likes to play in the hole, and he's just very dynamic. He's another example of the top Turkish talents that come here from Germany. There are tons of Turks, and they bring that combination of German physicality and coaching with that Turkish technical ability that is just second to none. And I know that the Turkish Association are licking their lips for these players, but they're not going to get them because they, you know, if they have the quality like Gundogan, for example, and Mesut Ozil, etc., they're going to choose to play for Germany if they can, and they're good enough too.
Yeah.
The Turkish are very special here. I think if there's, I guess, another player that's going to come to Anfield, I think that in general, I would look at the north west of Germany. I would look in the Ruhrpott. I would look in this area between Cologne, and Gelsenkirchen, Schalke, Dortmund, Bochum, Duisburg, Düsseldorf, up in here in that area of the Ruhrpott. This is the industrial northwest of Germany, you know, just like this industrial northwest of UK. And I think that the Turkish player, like an Emre Can, has a really, really nice fit. And I don't know who I'm going to tell you you're going to see, to be honest with you. I don't have one specific player, but I'd have a sneaking suspicion that he'd be from here, from the Ruhrpott. And I think that at the moment, your U19s, even your U17s, your U20s, your U21s, there are so many talents from this specific area. And they're blue-collar talents. You know, they come from humble backgrounds. They come from humble homes. And they work their socks off for the success that they have. And I would suggest that you'd probably see a boy coming from Schalke Academy, from Dortmund Academy, from Borussia Mönchengladbach Academy, which is very special. Yeah. Something from this area, I think, that you'd end up seeing in the long term.
Gladbach have really developed some good players. Like, you know, sending Kramer back to Leverkusen, like, they've really turned him to a football superstar now at this stage, given where he's come from. Like.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's his agent, who's a friend and a partner of mine, has sort of been torn between the idea of, you know, what club he's going to land at in the long term. And obviously they're both fantastic clubs, and they're at the moment both Champions League clubs, but I think that obviously he's contractually bound to Leverkusen.
Can you have a word and sort it out and make him come down for you?
he's a nice player in the hole. He's another guy that just gets the job done, unassuming. You don't see him so much, but he just almost Hargreaves like gets those tackles in, makes the easy ball, often forward if he can, and he's a workmanlike in his approach to football. And that's very German. That's a German philosophy. The Germans work their socks off, and I think you look at a striker, for example, like Miroslav Klose. How has he been so successful? He's not unbelievably fast. He's not unbelievably technical, but that guy works from the second that whistle is blown to the second it's done, and he just manages to be the guy who tactically is so well developed that he knows where to be. You know, and he has that work rate that goes with it. And I think Kramer is a good example of that as well. He's a guy who's, he hasn't had the best of seasons this year, but it's been decent. You know, and we're talking Champions League standard, of course, as well. That we can't forget that. But he just gets the job done, and he's been so well developed that I think that there's one player that could certainly fit into your side very well.
Oh, I know. Listen, Jeremy, an absolute pleasure. And it's nice to put a voice to the agents that all agents aren't evil, even if Raheem Sterling's might be. But it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the pod, and best wishes.
I appreciate it. I'd just like to throw a quick shout out to the Cork Schoolboys who came over here and joined me for a German tour a few months ago. So I know, I hope maybe some of them are listening. So they came over here and played Cologne and played Düsseldorf, and had a nice old experience against the U15s. So
did they win?
They just lost to Cologne, and they beat Düsseldorf, so they really showed themselves well. So Jerry Ducey, if you're out there, best wishes to your lads, and certainly your Cork boys came over here and really, really showed themselves. And it was only a schoolboys team, so it wasn't the best of the best that the South Shore has to offer, but they really showed themselves well.
Absolute pleasure, Brody. Thank you very much.
Cheers. My pleasure.
Okay, next up, we're going to look at a review of our first match versus Tie 11, Pepsi All-Stars. So lads, first preseason out of the way, thanks to God. We don't have to spend an hour talking about transfers, so let's dive in and talk about the match. Anything stand out? Performances or shape? See anything we actually should give a shit about? Or what's the thoughts? Paul?
Origi looks good. Yeah. That was about it.
No, but he looked concise. I like it.
I was really impressed with him. Obviously, he kind of looked the way we thought he would. He was quick, he looked skillful. Probably a bit raw, kind of in front of goal. He probably should have had a hat-trick. But I was really impressed with him, and I'm kind of fairly excited about him now. I know it's only like one match against a pack of accountants and fucking street merchants and all, but
still, Street Fighters.
I'm fairly excited with him.
Yeah, you'd have to feel that given the way, you know, Rodgers has worked with other strikers in terms of improving their strike rate in front of goal. There might be the raw elements there to work with.
Except for all our strikers last year.
Well, other than that. No, I said strikers. Not men wearing jerseys at the top of the field.
Yeah, hopefully. Like, I know you're not allowed to say anymore that he improved Suarez, but Suarez did really blossom under him. So hopefully someone like Origi, who has that, like, a kind of a good wide skill set. He looks, like, technically good. He's quick. Hopefully he can blossom under Rodgers as well.
Yeah. And Dave, what did you think?
Again, I was very impressed with Origi. I thought he looked sharp. I was definitely impressed. He played on the shoulder, the last man. I think we lacked that last year. I think a lot of our strikers dropped deep or pulled wide for the ball, especially when we were playing the diamond formation with one man up top. But even young Maguire put in a great ball at one stage and nearly got his toe to it. So he's definitely impressed with him. And he's good skills, and I think he's going to be good. Yeah. I do. And I think if Benteke did come to Liverpool, I think he could keep him out of the team and it fits Sturridge.
Okay. Interesting. Riser, what do you think yourself?
Yeah, no, I was impressed with it originally, but the big thing for me was scoring two goals from set pieces, two-headed goals. My Jesus, that was being our Achilles heel for how long now? Since Skirtle got them loads.
I think you're one of those nut jobs getting carried away. The opposition were like, three-foot toss.
It was like a team from shitting it when we can see corners, shitting it when we're taking corners, into us scoring two goals.
Did you know they were like happy with it? Beauty of players. Just they were up there in the box.
So it didn't matter.
Let's be honest.
When they came out onto the pitch, I actually heard,
no, in fairness, you'd have to think that the delivery last season was actually poor, not necessarily our attack of the ball. So you know, with a better delivery from the wide areas, be that the way we're going to play for Benteke or be that just from set pieces, it has to be promising to see that.
Well, we've got rid of Sterling now, so we'll be able to find someone who will cross the ball.
Well, this is a hell of a Phil, what did you think yourself? I heard a lot of people giving Maguire, sort of plaudits for his performance. What was your thoughts on that?
Look, I struggle to read too much into a game like that. It's purely first pre-season game. It's really a training exercise. Yeah. And that's half the reason why they picked the opposition. Because if you ever think of most of our first pre-season games, it's against pretty rubbish opposition.
Yeah, it's an exhibition game, nearly.
Yeah, it really is. But I thought there was a lot of good things that came out of it. I thought Ibe did well when he was on the pitch. From what I saw, Milner and Henderson, the way they played together, I know Alan was sitting behind them, but they looked to have an understanding, a fairly decent understanding on the pitch. And Henderson wasn't dropping in deep, and they were up against a team who weren't able to get out of their own half. And so many times when we play teams in Anfield, teams just sit back and camp in their own thing. So, absolutely. From that, it's a learning experience. It's not going to be anywhere near the same level as what they're playing against, but it's good for them to get used to being just be camped in the opposition's team,
and be able to break it down. And what do you think that?
I'll be honest with you. I thought Ings in the first half did very well. He could have had a couple of goals, and I thought his movement was really good. He was in and around the box. I thought in comparison to Lambert, who again looked like a non-league player.
Yeah.
But I genuinely thought Ings looked a lot better than I was expecting him to look. And he put in a shift, and he was unlucky not to score with a chance. And I thought Teixeira and Markovic, especially in the first half, I thought he looked really comfortable playing just behind the two front men. Mm. Put some great balls, took the goal really well. Like he was stumbling over and still managed to get the shot on target and get it away. And he took it around the keeper. It's a dying art of taking it around the keeper these days. I was really good. I was happy to see that. And again, Henderson did very well. That and now we're going to talk about this flick for the goal. And overall, there was a lot of good things. We're talking about some of the mad things that went on. But overall, I looked at that and say that's exactly what you want from your first preseason game: a comfortable win. They all got time on the pitch, and some of the fume and anger that went on before that game is laughable when you look at what it was.
Can I just say something now? Never again should the word fume be used on this podcast. Can we just get that out there now? It's a Twitter wanker saying. Nobody in the real world actually uses it, and if we could just refrain from ever saying it on the pod again, I would be most appreciative. So let's move on. I've no problem with the word fuming. That's fine. He was fuming. But when people start using the word utter fume, and it's just like, fuck off. Anyway, in terms of, I haven't heard anybody talk about Klein. What was the thoughts on Klein?
The unfortunate thing about Klein is that the side of the pitch he was playing on was waterlogged, so he couldn't play any ball. Right. Very difficult to get a look at him, but he did make some great ones forward, and he has a really, really good burst of pace. Similar, I think, he's even better than Seamus Coleman at the moment. When a couple of years ago, Coleman used to make great runs in behind, the back four of the opposition, which he doesn't do anymore. But it was good to see Klein. I'd like to see a right back that will get in behind the back four and get a good cross in.
That's what Johnson used to do.
Yeah.
It's
all dependent on what's in front of him as well. That's huge, because there's no point bombing on if you've got someone that's sort of playing in front of you and is not dropping back to cover your arse then as well. So you could get caught in that limbo land. So it'll all be dependent on what's in front and what way we're set up. But Milner, a lot of times there yesterday, went running from the middle over to the right wing to give him something to aim at. And it opened up the play nice for us as well. Nothing new there with Milner. It looks like fucking himself. And
Henderson had Joris El Bunny's there, the cunts had run all day, you know. Yeah.
You'd have to Klein made a couple of those runs, you know, towards the opposition box rather than just down the line. The one like the one he scored against us from.
And if that's the way he's set up, are you thinking Shan comes in for Alan in that same formation with the two lads in front of him?
It can only go on what's being said, and that's exactly where they've been talking about Emery Chan playing, because you know the German under 21 manager has said that he spoke to Rodgers and that's where Emery Chan is going to play this season. So
he actually said take over from Gerrard, didn't he, in that
position. So I don't see why not, because when I looked at it, I'm straight away thinking, you know, you'd imagine Chan sitting there instead of Alan, the physicality that he brings into there naturally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's more mobile than Lucas. It's like you're combining the two good parts of the Alan and Lucas.
And
game.
Somebody who's played centre half for
who can drop in.
Who can cover for Klein or Moreno if they've decided to go, I won't say walkabout,
or,
but bomb on.
More simpler, he just slots back into the middle of the centre backs and the two centre backs become auxiliary full backs.
Just on Klein there, I thought that I played as a wing back in the last game against Stoke Way and he had excellent forms. So if I did play some games on the right, it would definitely give Klein an option to go forward, because Ibe is good defensively. He would provide a good option to hold back.
Yeah, and I agree. Like when you looked at, even though that side was waterlogged, the two of them were looking to interchange. What I liked about it, in fairness, and look, the opposition isn't great, but there did seem to be some genuine understanding on the pitch between players. And you know, and again, what was really nice to see was pace, especially in the second half. We seemed to have loads of pace. The one thing that we were very slow last season. Yeah, build up, right?
Even the fast players, even the quick players that we have weren't building.
And the speed of play, as much as fellas just running by defenders. It's getting the ball moving it quickly and runners going quick.
Those conditions were really difficult. As I said, the waterlogged pitch, you could see the ball holding up and everything like that, but they were still able to move it quickly, and when they were getting on it, they were really moving the ball nicely. And it allowed, going back to Dave's earlier point about Origi, he has pace. Mm.
Yeah.
You know, and when you see
pace,
definitely
what we lacked up front last season, somebody to get in behind and stretch a defence.
And we seem to see a tactical variation in two, we saw two shapes in both halves. With the first half, they clearly played a diamond with two up front, and the second half, they went into a more orthodox 4-3-3 with one central striker up front. Mm. And you can say, to me, that's saying to me, okay, we seem to have finally now two default formations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you have the auxiliary one of the three at the back if needs be.
Yeah.
You know, so they're all signs of progression. And again, you don't want to go over the top, you don't get too carried away. But that's what you want to see in pre-season.
No, absolutely.
The only thing you want to see in pre-season is, what lessons have we learned? How are we trying to rectify it? And what progression has been made with the players that we've signed?
And of course, the weather will have us acclimatized for Stoke. on a wet
Saturday.
I felt a bit sorry for Teixeira as well, because he's been saying this is a massive pre-season for me. He came back super quick from that injury he had. I was shocked that he was back so quick from that. And then, so he's coming in, he's saying this is a huge pre-season for me, and he's getting on the ball all the time and looking up, and he's trying to thread it through for Ricky Lambert. And it was absolutely ridiculous watching Lambert trying to get on the end of these.
Teixeira must be there going, listen, I may as well be playing with my broken leg. Be fucking playing balls to this fella.
And then he looked good though.
Yeah, he did.
And then the second half, when Teixeira comes off, that he has Origi, Ibe, and all these players on the pitch overlapping everywhere.
Fuck off, Brent. Give me a chance. And what about Hendo's Rabona? It was a sexual little bit of play. But, you know, I think he had an okay season last year, and that's okay. Everybody, you know, there's no real people came out with any sort of great kudos. Yeah, but I really can see him pushing on this season. And I really hope he does. I hope he steps it up.
I agree with you, Phil, absolutely. And I think unfortunately with Stevie last year, Hendo was left, you know, doing a lot of the pressing himself because Stevie didn't have the legs. Mm. And when Milner is in the side now, the two of these lads can press, you know, similar to 2 years ago when we didn't have the ball. Remember, it was 4, 5, 6 seconds we were getting it back. And last year, Hendo was doing double the workload because Stevie couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So now, with Milner and Hendo, you know, I think we can really, really press.
And you have two players who are going to press, but can also play football.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, which is a massive important. But you don't just have a yard dog who's going to go chasing after fucking anything at all.
The sign of a player progressing is that he can make ordinary opposition look poor.
Mm.
And Henderson, to his credit, made ordinary opposition look poor yesterday. Even to pull off the Rabona, you know, as an assist. That's exactly what it does.
Yeah.
That's what you expect from top level players.
He's pulled off a PR blinder here as well.
Yeah.
Because
there was
a big, like, kind of when he was made captain, there was a lot of people that were very underwhelmed and all. But he's nailed the Asian market. Yeah. He's went out against the big packer. Like, I don't know.
He just filmed a Pepsi ad yesterday doing the exact same Rabona.
Nutmegs and all he was pulling out. Like.
I think as part of the FIFA contract, he has to do one Rabona per game.
Surely the Coke and noodles market is where you really want to be hitting.
I'd say Sean O'Driscoll was there with the PlayStation 4 controller.
Yeah. It does show. It definitely shows Henderson's level of confidence at the moment. You know, a lot of things are going right from recently, and fair enough, it's a pre-season friendly, but to try that, you know, it shows where he's at, and it's good. You know, it's positive, definitely.
Yeah.
And last but not least, Lambert. You know, we got to give a special mention for Dickie, don't we?
Well, in fairness, right, there was between himself and Lovren. Lovren carried on as he did last season. Yeah. I was there going, I genuinely, the fella was hoofing balls all over the shop. At one stage, there was nobody in front of him for a ball out to Klein. And for some reason, he wanted to chip a 60-yard pass that went straight over Klein's head and out the touch. And you could actually see Klein going, fuck me.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. Ah, that old special. Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, look, those are players that if they all have a future, Lambert doesn't have a future, let's be honest about this at the club, right? I'd be amazed if he's here in September. I'd be absolutely amazed. I don't know where he plays.
I think if the Benteke deal goes through, he probably heads the opposite direction.
Even without the Benteke deal, I'd say if they don't sign another striker, they'd be more likely to keep Balotelli than keep Lambert.
Mm. Yeah. And rightly so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. Rightly so. And lads, what about Lawrenson on commentary?
Oh, my.
Are we going to have to suffer him for every preseason game?
He absolutely slays Liverpool on every neutral channel. And then when he's with LFC TV, he's like, we. I think, who's we? Yeah. All of a sudden.
I didn't realise you had an affiliation to the Asian All-Stars.
Oh, my God. And everything. He was like, he was making things, and by halfway through, like he was just making general stereotypical comments, right? And you could hear, I don't know whether it was John Bradley, whatever, doing the commentating, and you could actually hear him going, "Fuck!" He was just going.
That fucking bollock shredded silence after Lawrenson's gags. You know when he does a gag and it just goes flat. Like,
change the fucking channel. Where's the mute button?
The rain was coming down. And he was like, yeah, they used to rain out here, yeah. And you just heard your man going,
yeah, he started telling a story about a thunderstorm on a previous flight, and your man was terrified holding me hand, this ex-player. Do you remember such and such? Yeah. Well, he was terrified for an hour. He thought we were going to die in that plane crash, and it was just...
I must have missed Laurel and Coronation Street.
Got to Rovers.
All right, come up, try one of Becky's hot pots.
Seen up Deirdre Barlow's funeral.
She was there with Trev.
Okay, so
genuinely, what's he doing on the fucking channel?
Who knows?
He was
probably the cheapest person available. Anyway, since we've been last recording, we've obviously seen the inevitable exit of Glenn Johnson, and there was probably a big cheer for that. Especially, there was definitely in here anyway. And obviously, we've lost Sterling as well, which, you know, some people will say goodbye and good riddance. Others will be quite upset that it's happened, or at least feel an element of we've lost out on one of our better players. So what's the general consensus in here, Phil?
Look, the way Sterling goes, it went really sour, and it leaves a bitter taste in your mouth because of the way the agent pushed it, the way Sterling himself pushed it. Like, you know, a lot of anger was aimed towards his agent, and I know from interviewing Jeremy Dow on Saturday, he was saying, you know, agents will act in the interest of their players, and they won't do anything that isn't sanctioned by the player. You know what I mean? It's very
they'll do it once, then it'll be a slap on the wrist.
Sterling did multiple things multiple times, and we all were happy to blame the agent because we wanted Sterling to stay, and you didn't want to fall out of love with the player because you're expecting the deal to be done. When in reality, he wanted out. He wanted out from the off
from February onwards.
Yeah, he wanted out, and you know. And that leaves a bit of, but you know, the stuff that Sterling did for us while he was there as a player, he did some wondrous stuff.
Yeah,
he became one of the top young players in Europe. That run we had the season before last, Sterling was third best player on the team. You know, those stories with Suarez and with Sterling, we were talking about the three S's. We were talking about how wonderful this young player was coming through, and with those, and we were talking about him playing behind the two of them as a 10, and how amazing, well, how far can this fella's potential and development go? And people say, oh, his attitude's terrible and he's fucking shite, and you know, he's gone to flop at Manchester City. You think about it, when he had his head down and he was playing for us, and he was fully engaged and fully committed to what he was doing, and fuck me, that's an immense player waiting to happen. So if his head is right at Manchester City,
which it will be, it's a fresh start. He's under pressure now. You know, at Liverpool, exactly. You know, even in the last 6 months, he was guaranteed his game. You know, you can say he was rested here, he was rested there, whatever else. That's the club trying to show their strength here and there. But truthfully, you know, when you were looking at your best fit 11, he was always in it. He's not guaranteed a start at City. I personally think he will start, but you know, Paul, what's your thoughts on it?
I'm not too sad to see him go, to be honest, like, because he's been a giant thunder cunt for the past couple of months, really. And by the end, it was just like something new every day was just popping up. And like, I'd agree with Phil, like, it's not all just the agent, like, you know, like he's a 20-year-old man. He's not an 8-year-old kid. Yeah. Like, you know, if the agent was doing something he didn't want him to,
you'd rein him in.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So like, obviously, it's a lot of potential gone, but. Like, it was hard that the writing was on the wall, really, with the BBC interview. It was really clear.
That's when it really happened, wasn't it?
So from there, I kind of, you know, took a step back from it. I wasn't, like, too emotionally invested in him or anything. So, I'm not too bothered to see him go. Obviously, long term, it's more of a problem, really, because he could blossom into a tremendous player. But in the short term, 49 million for where he's at now is huge money. We're going to piss it up the wall, like, but it is huge money.
and you know what, you have to give credit to the club for having stood their ground. They got an offer of 20 million, they got an offer of 30 odd million. They've stood firm, and they've done this the whole way through with the Suarez to Arsenal thing, the Suarez to Barcelona thing, the Sterling thing. Now they're sending out a clear message
that they won't
be fucked over or sell their assets cheap.
Especially with the pressure and the kind of scrutiny that was on it, because every day there was something from Sterling or his agent, something got leaked. So
you start to nearly feel that the player doing all of that is reducing his value in the market because less people become interested.
We held on. So we're just, obviously, it's a kind of a false positive. Like, you're kind of think, oh, we're great at selling our best players here, but we did get a lot of money for him. So like, on that end, I am happy with it. Yeah.
Okay. And thoughts on Johnson gone?
Razor? Yeah, say Stoker happy.
Yeah. Yeah. He looked happy when he was being unveiled.
Someone say he took the number 8 jersey. Seriously? Well, Roy Full taking the number 8, and that shows his aspirations for playing on fullback and defending.
I'm going to be Stoke Stevie G. That's what he's thinking. Okay, no, listen. Sorry.
Yeah, no, just there's a lot. Paul touched on the thunder cunt element of Sterling is what we're happy to lose.
Yeah.
Right? But we don't want to be seen. I don't want to see us keep selling our best players every summer. At some stage, it has to stop. If we want to progress, we can't keep expecting to sell one big player every summer, because you're going to be in permanent transition. Because you'll never get that solid core of a team. Arsenal have had to do that up until about 3 or 4 years ago, and only now are Arsenal starting to put together a squad that you're looking at saying, Jesus, these lads could actually have a title tilt this year. And I know, look, I seen
Niall Quinn, I think he was on Sky Sports, and he was there earlier, and he just said something, and it was just sort of a little bit of a dig to the stomach, sort of. He just turned around, it's not happening, you know, this is sort of the start of something, maybe, where you're seeing people, players leaving Liverpool, it was always to Spain, it was to Madrid or Barcelona, that was the step up. Now, over the last couple of years, I've just seen it, they're drifting off to these other teams that are just above us in the league. And it is a bit of a here's your pecking or place in the pecking order type of thing, you know. Where
I think I was saying it to Dave earlier on as well. Jump in if you want to. But like, just, you know, it's City. There's two teams in the league that no one else can compete with if they want to lash as much money as they want, and that's Chelsea and City because they're prepared to just do.
I think you have to put United into that bracket as well. Look at the money they've spent in the last two summers.
I read a scary stat yesterday. It was that Van Gaal has spent more money in the last year than Ajax have in their whole
history. I saw that.
But just on Sterling myself, personally, I think it's fantastic money. I really, really do. You know, it definitely has potential. But you know, it can be argued that he can't finish at the moment. You know, it can be argued that some of his decision making is quite poor. You know, some of his touches is quite poor. But don't get me wrong, he's definitely a phenomenal talent. But I think the 49 million is a great business. You know, the last few months, I thought that his form definitely dipped. And the worry for me was going in another season playing like that, what kind of value will we get from? Will we get 20 million, 25 million?
At best, given that he wasn't going to sign a new contract.
That was the fear, you know, and having someone in that dressing room, I think he's, of that, his attitude like that, I think it's poison. You know, we can't have someone like that in the dressing room.
Yeah.
So it is a worry, definitely is a worry that, you know, we're selling to Manchester City, yeah, for sure. You know,
yeah, that is, but like Suarez, losing Suarez, that's like a massive blow. But this is almost like a special case, because it's not often that like a 20-year-old will decide that he's, normally, even if you are below the top tier in your own league, normally you can keep like a player like Sterling until maybe for one contract more, until he's about 23, and then he'll start saying, hang on, I think I'm outgrowing these. But for I think there's brass balls on him to be 20 and rejecting huge money and saying, I have to go and play for Man City.
Yeah, I think
that's not going to happen with everyone. Like Coutinho, you could see him staying another couple of years, even if we're at the level we are now, before he kind of says, my career is getting on a bit, I'm coming towards my peak now and I have to move. Yep. I think it's a bit of a 20-year-old.
I agree with you, right? And I think he's a bit of a freak player in terms of the level of expectation that everyone has around him, right? But if you look at it, like Rooney did the same when he went from Everton to United, right? And he never fulfilled the potential that he had.
Yeah.
And although I think Sterling's going to do well at City, you wonder, had he stayed, Liverpool inevitably would have built a team around him to get the best out of him, right? City are not going to build a team around Raheem Sterling because they have so many top, especially when they have Sergio Aguero there, Silva and the whole, and all the other players that's there, he will have to fit in to the City team.
Dave, I'll give the counterpoint and maybe see what your thoughts are on this. You know, Raheem Sterling flourished as he did because he had somebody like Suarez driving him, demanding the best from him. You look at it last season with Sturridge out most of the year, who else around in a similar position to him was actually driving him to be the best he could? He had Mario Balotelli, who looks like he can't give a fuck most of the time, and he had Ricky Lambert, who was probably on a mobility chair at certain points of the day, therefore not spending a lot of time training.
Yeah, that's a very fair point, but I suppose, you know, Stevie's been in his ear the last 2 years, you know, and kind of guiding him, taking him under his wing, you know, giving him advice. And I'm sure Stevie's thinking, what is going on here? You know, this lad is gone all of a sudden.
But what do you think when your captain decides to fuck off? You know, your captain's in your ear saying, this is the best club.
It's different.
But Stevie, for an impressionable 20-year-old, this is what you have to think about. You've got the choice to go to City, and it might not be nice, and Liverpool fans might not like to hear it, but you've got the choice to go to City, double your wages, be in a team of superstars, and know that they are going to buy well most summers, and go and buy the best of what they can.
It's a fair point, and I can definitely see Sterling's view and why he did go to City. But in my opinion, 49 million is huge money for him.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think, overall, I think Liverpool are the winners. And I suppose, as mentioned before, I mentioned Jordan Ibe, I think that he seriously will flourish now that Raheem Sterling's gone. If Raheem Sterling remained at the club 2 or 3 years' time, Ibe definitely wouldn't have turned into the player that he will become now, because now he has the opportunity to step up. You know, I think that if we didn't have someone like Jordan Ibe that can become as good as Sterling, in my opinion, I'd be more worried. But I think that he has every attribute and more. You know, he's stronger, he's better defensively, his decision-making seems to be much better. But like I said, yes, Sterling definitely can become a great player. But a lot of players could become great players. Sean Wright Phillips could have become a great player, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay, we'll hold it there because you have the interview to go in.
Okay, when you're ready, can we just get into the... We'll just feed into then the Benteke talk.
Right? Yeah. Go. So this Benteke saga, lads, how long drawn out do you think we can manage to actually keep it going? Are we going to go right up to transfer deadline day, or you know, we might even just wait till January, you know, sign him then? What's the thought?
No rush. I've been weighing this up in my mind for the last few weeks, and I'm trying to come to a conclusion. Definitely there's pros for Benteke and definitely there's cons, you know, but I think it's kind of ironic that we're expecting Villa to budge, yet we stood so firm on Raheem Sterling's figure, you know, we weren't budging at all. Can he be the goal? You know, he scored 11 in 9 under Sherwood, but he only scored 2 in the last 15 under Lambert. So which Benteke are we going to get?
Yeah.
You know, that's the fear for me. Yeah, a friend pointed out to me recently, you know, I said, oh, we don't need a big target man, we don't throw crosses in like that, you know, and he said, well, you know, Brendan Rodgers sold Andy Carroll, you know, the year before he could have won the league, and he said, if you did have Andy Carroll and you did have a plan B, would you have won the league? Because I remember the game against Chelsea at Anfield, we were out of ideas, we were looking at each other, start the second half saying, what are we going to do next? So possibly, do we need a target man like that?
The question is, yet again, do we need a £30 million pound plus plan B?
But that's the problem, I think. The money is crazy.
I'll offer the counter to it, right? That, and I'm going with Dave Thomas here because I don't believe this part myself, right? But his argument is that if you sign a mobile target man and you're saying that Benteke is a mobile target
man. Which he is. He's far more mobile than Andy Carroll.
Yeah. It's then you're signing a target man plus.
A hybrid.
Yeah. So you can still play your normal styles.
He's the Prius.
Yeah.
2-in-1.
He works both on electric and petrol.
You've seen him play, like, and you know, when he's up against, like, when he's in oceans of space, he looks relatively mobile and relatively skillful. When you put him up against the way teams play against us, like, he's not gonna look mobile at all.
Unless we can manage to get Martin Skrtel to play in the opposition every week, whereby he's liable to bag 2 to 3 goals a week.
My fear is that is the same as Paul's. Is that he's more Emre Can than he is Sturridge. So he looks mobile when he's got space to run into and can build up pace, right?
Yeah.
But his turning acceleration isn't that quick. And people think of quick players. It's not that they're naturally really fast. No, it's that their turning acceleration is really fast and can get them 3, 4, 5 yards. Yeah, over a long distance, they get caught.
It's what Steven Gerrard used to have.
Yeah, and Suarez.
He used to have a yard and a half to just get bypass people and get the shot off.
Suarez was a brilliant example. Yeah. He didn't have great, he wasn't very pacey. But when he also had an incredible turn. So when he turned, he could leave players for dead, get 2 yards, and it looked like, how did he get that from? Yeah. He must be a very quick player. Aguero was very similar as well. Yes. He's not really fast, but he has that burst of acceleration.
Yeah, initial few yards,
So when I'm looking at him, I'm saying, okay, Benteke might be fast, but I don't know if he's a quick accelerator. And that sort of comes back to, it's the same. Balotelli is a fast player. Yeah, when you see him get into a stride,
you put him over 100 yards, he's going to look quick.
Or when you see him going, say, when you saw him, when he was bursting, say, from 40 yards out, and you saw him running with the play when it was going on the pitch.
I made
that comment on the pod. I said he was keeping up with Sterling and the other players that was going on. Mm. The problem is that when the ball was fed into him, when he went to turn, he's a slow turner. Mm. He's good at being able to lay the ball off or flick it around the door, but he's not saying he's slower.
I wouldn't do a knick-knack on his door.
You wouldn't fire a snowball at him and hope he'll run away.
Of all the players I know, I'd want to call into the house to have a chat. Like. Yeah.
Why would you knick-knack on Balotelli's door? Surely
it would be more interesting going inside.
Watch telly with him.
Yeah, like playing PlayStation or something. Enrique in the corner.
And there's been reports this evening whilst we've been in here about the Birmingham, I think it was the Birmingham Press, were reporting that Benteke is a possible target or heavily linked with Man United. You know, if that happens, Ray, what do you see? People are referring to him as our plan B. What would be our actual plan B from a transfer perspective?
Jesus, I haven't a clue as in plan B. My whole thing with Benteke was the price, and you know, look, there'll be the usual snapping going on online then if United come in. People that said they didn't want him will crack up then.
Obviously,
you know,
he'd be brilliant.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Like Dave Sherpin, you don't want him at all.
He's not even the ex-girlfriend, you're
sitting there across the room, no, you're not talking to her, he's sitting there first.
I picked ours with 2 a.m. right? So you're not getting her now.
How is Benteke going to react when you text him at 3 a.m. on a Saturday?
Personally, my plan B, there's a striker there, he scored 13 international goals and 33 for Italy, his name is Mario Balotelli. Personally, I'd like to see him given a chance in the two up front. You know, I know a lot of people are, even from here and around, a lot of anti-Balotelli guys around here. But I really think, you know, the test of a good manager for me is to get the very best out of a talented player. You know, he did get 46 and 70 prior to coming with Inter and City. And of course, Balotelli has been an enigma. You know, we've all know the stories, what he's been at. But in my opinion, he hasn't really, he has matured as a person a lot. You know, he doesn't bring that controversy on him anymore that he used to. You know, the odd thing he'll do, he'll throw a silly Instagram photo up now. But, you know, the first game he played for us, he played 60 odd minutes against Spurs, and he's up front with Sturridge, and the two of them looked, you know, they looked good together. And in my opinion, he's been unlucky. You know, Sturridge has gotten injured at the wrong time for him as well, and a lot of time he's played up front in on top of the diamond, and he, like I said earlier, he drops deep for the ball or pulls wide, and inevitably he looks up where his strike partner should be, or he should be. So personally, I think Balotelli should be given another season.
I wouldn't have too much of a problem with that myself, to be honest with you. You know, I think, you know,
was he dropped from this tour? What was the?
No, he's on compassionate leave. His adopted father, I think, or foster father, was passed away.
I could buy into it if I didn't think that Rodgers was so anti Balotelli.
I think if Rodgers had wanted him in the first place, then
I think he would have more. I think, to be honest with you, I think Lambert has more of a chance of staying than Balotelli does. That's the madness of it. I can agree with around the talent, and I could see, you could even say, listen, Mario, I'm going to sell you. You're going to be fourth choice striker, and you have to get in ahead of Origi and Ings if you want to get back into it, you know, as a carrot to get him motivated. But at the same time, we'd be going into a season where we're again fully reliant on Sturridge being fit and not getting injured, because I don't want to see the pressure on Ings. We saw what happened with David and Go. You know what I mean? He looked a talented player. We're into the exact same situation again. I don't want to see this pressure on him. He needs to get Coca-Cola games, runs in Europa League, and if he scores goals and he gets in on merit, fine. But you don't want to be fully reliant on him. I don't think Ings over an extended run would bring enough goals for us. I think we'd have the same issue as we had last year. He would score more goals, but I don't think he'd score enough. So we're back to, we need somebody that we can trust, not as a plan B, but as a plan AA.
We need a Torres Suarez type of figure,
so that if one is gone, the other one's in, and if the two of them are there, they can play together. And for me, that
you want to replicate, not necessarily Suarez as a player, but you were able to play Suarez on his own, Sturridge played games on his own, with the lads around him playing wide, Coutinho and Sterling, but then you could move the formation around to play both of them together as well.
As mentioned at Benteke there, you know, I agree, the money is crazy for him, but Will he be guaranteed to start? In my opinion, I don't know. Are we going to spend 32 million on a player? In my opinion, I don't think he'd start week in, week out. Potentially, Origi and Sturridge could get in the team ahead of him.
And if it is just one up front, and God forbid, well, Sturridge is out there getting, I don't know, leading kryptonite injections or something, and he's able to play the entire season. You could be talking about paying that type of money for a substitute if he's playing one up top.
But the big elephant in the room is that, for me, Sturridge doesn't play well in one up top.
So he needs
a strike partner.
Well, my opinion with Sturridge is, I thought that year Suarez had, it was incredible, and he created so much space for Sturridge, because the two or three defenders are just looking for Suarez every time he's on the ball, and Sturridge benefited from that greatly, you know. So Sturridge is more tightly marked now. I don't know, will he score the same amount of goals he scored that year?
It's going back to your point about the Spurs game. That was arguably Sturridge, when the last game he was fit in, and it was the best game he played all last season, right? When he came back from the injury, for the little spell he had from injury, he was playing up front on his own, and he never looked as threatening because he had two players marking him all the time. Where he benefits when he isn't being, hasn't got two players on him. Now, I'm hoping, looking at the way we lined up, that that's being learned, as I was saying, going back to the match that we looked at where they played two up front. And if you that's where I can understand sort of Benteke and Sturridge playing as a two up front. That's where I can sort of say, I can get that. You know what I mean?
But do you not see then Origi and Sturridge up front in the sense of,
I think they're very similar.
Origi's keeping Benteke out of the...
Well, he's not at the moment.
Is he not?
No, so Benteke was starting the last game and he was called a statue by the manager.
So you'd have to assume he's not going to start the next one.
No, well, if it isn't, then Lukaku's in the squad as well. Origi is third choice behind those two boys.
Right,
so all I'm saying is that, you know, he's a kid. Origi's a kid. Ings, for me, is going to be the backup to whoever we sign, plus Sturridge.
Yeah.
And then Origi will come in for games here and there.
Yeah, but or if his pace would make him that little bit different. If
you're missing Sturridge and you're saying, right, Ings and whoever it is me front two, then Origi's going to be on the bench, and if they need to bring on someone who's going to be similar to Sturridge to change the shape,
let's not forget the Firmino. I know he's a centre player, like, you know, he can play in behind a one up top, you know, kind of in the hole as a, I suppose, a false nine. He's definitely another option there, you know.
Absolutely.
But alternatives, I don't know. People are saying we've got you know, there's mad talk of Lacazette again. Well, here's the great
thing. It shouldn't be mad talk. Why can't we just make a bid, though?
Here's the greatest mystery of Lacazette.
If he wants 80 grand a week and you come in and offer him 100 before someone else offers 120, he'll take that.
I don't know if he does, right? Like, this is the argument I've had with a few people. If you go in and say, right, we'll pay you 25 million, you're looking for 21, we'll pay you 80 grand, or we'll pay you 100 grand, you're looking for 80. An agent's job isn't to say, okay, take that. An agent's job is to ring the other clubs who are interested and say, okay, Liverpool have made a firm offer of 25. They've made an offer of 100 grand. That's what you need to do.
Earlier on, we said about Sterling and that these agents work on their players' orders. If he has said to them, if you get me 100 grand a week, I'm happy. There's no reason that he could be slightly different.
But he's probably
saying, I'd be happy with 100 grand.
He probably wants to live in London.
Maybe.
Or fucking Barcelona or Madrid.
Can I give him my...
Absolutely, Phil. You're going to whether I let you or not.
If you've noticed, that very few English clubs have been linked with Lacazette, just in general. Mm. Right? Mm. We've talked, United need a striker, he hasn't been linked with them.
He's been linked to Arsenal.
Everyone gets linked to Arsenal and then it never happens.
That's Sterling.
Sterling was linked to Arsenal. Firmino,
Suarez
was going to Arsenal.
Well, Suarez wanted to go to Arsenal. Be honest about this.
Yeah. Suarez wanted to go anywhere. That
Suarez gave them the pound to go over to the East Club.
He's a pound, my friend.
Actually, just on that, to think that Arsenal thought they were going to get Suarez for 40 million and a pound when we got 49 million for Sterling, it's incredible.
Yeah, it is nuts. Only a year later.
I think there's a deal for Lacazette done. And I think he's going to PSG. And I think PSG need to sell some players at the moment.
Yeah, they probably need to shift Cavani or someone like
Cavani
that.
To United,
it could be, yeah. But going back to what Ray was saying, if you do go in with a serious bid to both the club and the player, then at least like you're in the running for it. Like you're not, and like you're in there earlier before the bigger clubs. We did it with Firmino. Like,
yeah. You do hear players saying that this early interest. They say, "What made you come here?" And they say they were the first ones to come in. They showed an interest early.
In all honesty, Firmino should be playing in the Champions League, but like. We went in and with like a serious offer to him and the club, and the club accepted it, and his agent like it's like, oh yeah, there's a few people interested in you, but here's Liverpool who are properly like they really seem to want you. So like,
I agree.
You'd have a chance at least if you did go in seriously. Like,
I suppose the other question to ask is, where does he fit in the team after we've signed Marco Reus? That's all the laughing for, lads.
I might have the Sterling Firmino.
I've been on Twitter 2 days this month, yeah. And both days that we were definitely signing them. Surely they know what they're talking about.
I heard a few lads have had a whisper in John Henry's ear. Yeah. That's bound to work. Yeah, yeah. So.
No, but I definitely agree. We need to show some intent. You know, someone said to me on Twitter during the week, we can't be going for these players because if you bid for them and you don't get them, then John Henry looks silly. You know, we need to show some intent and make bids for these players and show that, you know, we mean business. You know, instead of afraid to go for Marco Reus or Lacazette and just buying, you know, championship player instead, like Will Hughes or something, you know?
Yeah.
Who was telling me 6 months of Will Hughes mania? People going around with Will Hughes t-shirts on and blonde wigs.
We're all sitting here with our hair dyed blonde.
Except me.
Ray just took the head off a mop.
What about Tom Ince? We couldn't even sign Tom Ince.
Yeah, we couldn't sign him back after he left us.
With our boy back clubs.
Yeah. With our own boy back clubs. No, you can't have him back. I don't care what club you have.
But yeah, but is Marco Reus, who some liking photographs?
He liked Marino followed him on Instagram, so now
it's on.
It's definitely happening. That's absolutely.
If I was Saka or somebody in the dressing room, saying, lads, come on, let's all get on the fucking Instagram and let's all fucking start following Marco. Just for a laugh, like seriously, like a group of lads, you'd be just there, you'd be following everyone. Messi, come on.
DMing him. See you soon, bro.
Or the ultimate get back. There's Lambert. Come on, lads, we all unfollow. We do what Madrid did to Casillas.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to say. That was terrible.
Did you see him? Did you see him throw him a Porto and his arms crossed like he was on the bold step?
Like he got sentenced to Porto.
His mother in the paper is giving the large one saying they're a third rate team and he should never have gone there. crazy stuff, really.
But it was like, I think there was tweets in the space of 5 minutes where Madrid put out, thank you, St. Deca, for all the stuff. And there was a picture of trophies 5 minutes later. Unfollowed.
Really?
No, they unfollowed him.
That's because Casillas was sending them DMs because he wanted to come get it. And just on that, you're not a top player anymore unless your mother or father says something in the media.
Absolutely. Well, Jordan Ibe's mother is Canadian, isn't she?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Sterling said in his thing that his mum thought he looked well in blue there for his first photo shoot. I see.
If his mother didn't think he looked well in blue, there's something wrong. Like if your mother's saying that you're not bothered,
you get a bit of love off your mammy. Who can you get it off?
Huh? When has your mother ever said you look brutal?
About two weeks ago, actually.
My mother doesn't like skinny jeans. Where are you going?
Are you going out?
why are you wearing your sister's jeans? I look well in them.
To be fair, she was upset because I was in the shower in her underwear. But I thought I was killing two birds with one stone, to be honest with you.
Just on that Benteke deal, it's reminded me a small bit of the Clint Dempsey deal a couple of years ago. Remember, we couldn't get him over the line and Spurs came in, then all of a sudden just swooped. Yeah. That may well happen with United, but...
Well, if it does, it works out in the same way. I'll be happy to save 30 million.
If they want to save us from ourselves, they're fucking more than welcome.
I think some of the players
Clint
have to mention that we've
Leinster Senior League Division 2 this season. Yeah, I think so.
Clint Dempsey, Will Hughes, Tom Ince, we're really aiming to win the Champions League.
To be fair, I have one of the worst shaming stories ever where I publicly announced that I wanted Tom Ince over Coutinho.
I don't know who Coutinho is.
I knew who he was. I knew he was just this young lad who'd played some games with Inter and then had been loaned out. And I thought, well, fuck it. You know, what's going to make him a success over Tom Ince? You know, tearing it up in the Championship.
Whether you're watching some of the foreign leagues, I wouldn't have had a brace at the time. 8 million, this kid coming in from Inter, I hadn't a fucking clue. I know that someone at Inter Milan ended up with a horse's head in his bed after that sale.
Hello, this is Ronnie Whelan here, and you're listening to Tripper Chats. Unbelievable stuff. You ask me anything about Liverpool FC, I will answer it immediately. I'm an encyclopedia. As you know, I played for Liverpool in the 1980s, won many trophies, played with the likes of Kenny Dalglish, Graham Souness. What a team we were. We were just unbelievable. Anyway, Tripper.
Okay, so we move on to Tripper's Chats and get a bit of shy talk going. Not that I haven't been done for that already.
Get it going. It's gone about an hour.
Step it up a level, so.
Up the ante.
Take it up a notch.
So we have... we have some in here now.
One
from @SnakeGriffin asks, would you rather piss yourself anytime you stood up or shit yourself anytime you sat down? Dave.
I have to go for the shit myself.
Every time you sat down?
Every time I sat down, yeah.
Really?
Do you sit down less than you
just
stand
the warmth from pissing yourself. It's just very uncomfortable, isn't it?
Well, not when you're pissing yourself. It's lovely.
Sit on a log.
It's when it gets cold that it becomes uncomfortable. The warmth of pissing yourself is something wonderful.
What about the itch? You ever get to dribble down your pants when you get the kind of...
You think it's not going to itch if you're sitting in your own log all day? And it's trying to crawl its way back up your...
Not when you have a bit of pseudo cream.
This shit, no.
How'd you get the pseudo cream through the shit?
I'm all about the piss.
Do you have to leave the shit there when you do it, or can you scoop it out?
Smell-wise, with the worst gag reflex now. You could show me people dying left, right, and center. Wouldn't bother me. Smells.
Run some blue cheese under your nose.
I used to do deliveries, right, and they sent me down to that the Rings End water treatment plant. So I spent 20 minutes bringing boxes into the place now, literally getting sick all over their stationery as I was carrying it. It was helping you walk here. Not like just smells piss all the way. I piss all over myself all day long, down the way, up the way, in the way, and just
well, at least with the piss though, you could take your jocks down and not get piss all over yourself.
You have to get up and
proper wet yourself
in your pants.
You have to do
these are the rules.
Well, no,
if I'm not allowed to scoop,
this is real life and you don't have to do either. You can just go to the jacks. But for the purpose of this question, yes,
if I'm not allowed to scoop the shit out of me hoop, right, you're not allowed to pull your fucking Mickey out and piss on the ground instead, right?
That's just having a piss in public, mate. That's not really a tough choice. You left it there.
You could just tie a bag into yourself.
So come here, what's the thoughts on the McGregor fight? Anybody actually give a shit apart from Ray? I know Ray loves him.
He's grown on me.
Yeah, no. He was a mouthpiece, and now he's at the moving up, stepping up a level there, and he's backing it up. He fought against a style of fighter that everyone said he was going to be weak against. Your man spent a lot of the fight on top of him, hitting him with his best shots, and in the post fight presser, your man says that as he was hitting him, McGregor was actually going, didn't hurt. Is that all you've got? As he was clobbering him with elbows, and then got up and sparked him out. He's top boxer, and I'm delighted for him. It's bleeding.
Ah, listen, yeah,
it's
yeah,
great to see an Irish fella doing well.
I don't care about the UFC myself, but as an Irish sports star, you know, yeah. Listen, you can call him a wanker, whatever, but why would you want somebody from a different country to win ahead of? Yeah,
I was really impressed how well he can take a punch.
Yeah,
you know, I didn't see him take punches like that before.
Yeah, but listen, that's never actually been said about me. Is only bad. Let's say if you're crap. Let's face it, Muhammad Ali was the biggest trash talker you'll ever hear in your life, and he was loved for it. People go back now.
But he's an intelligent man. He's seriously marketable now, isn't he? You know, all from the spoofing. But
yeah.
He can back it up. He's now a star
superstar. In the UFC.
He's the biggest.
And he will be the one that they're able to promote as a box office hit for them.
He's the Coutinho of the
UFC.
Here's
a question. If Raheem Sterling goes and wins the league with City next season, does he justify all his shite talk and his decisions for Liverpool fans?
Depends on his input.
Yeah,
he justifies his decision to go to City. He doesn't justify being an absolute wanker, basically.
There's certain ways to go about things, and he went about it the wrong way.
Did we not sign Suarez in the exact same fashion, fellas?
Yeah, but listen, you know, that's football. It's tribalism, man.
Hang on. Do you think? Do you think? If we go on to win the league, that we'd welcome Sterling back the same way the Ajax fans welcome Suarez back? Now, you know, there's a massive difference to Suarez and Sterling. In terms of, you know, people say, oh, look, it looks the same as the way Suarez left Ajax, but he didn't, because he never fell out with the fans, and the fans didn't turn against Suarez the whole time he was there.
Yeah, which is fair. We have another one here from Shapaz Music. First single or album you ever purchased? Paul, I'll put that one to you, given your love of music.
I couldn't tell you. Probably some fucking dance compilation when I was about 12 or something.
Mine was the London Boys Harlem Nights. No,
London Boys.
Harlem Boys, London Nights.
Mine was Hanson Mbop.
Nice. Nice. Mine was Michael Jackson Bad, the album.
Yeah. That would have been probably one of my first albums.
Yeah. That was my first album.
Bobby Brown's album.
I can't remember. They were going into black and white memories.
Yeah, it was Dean Martin.
What was the first cassette that you bought?
What did you buy for your gramophone?
It would have been the Now, very first Now.
Now one.
Now one.
It wasn't even one. There was no numbers. It was just
now.
A pig was the emblem.
I remember that. Yeah.
What was the emblem?
A pig with earphones or shades on or something.
No.
Was a cool pig.
Trev's first record was a silent record because they hadn't invented sound yet.
I heard there's an oil painting of Beethoven handing him a symphony.
Just writing music on a script at the time.
Then you put on a spin and just spun her. Sitting on Beethoven's piano.
What's
the thing that's annoying you most about Liverpool fans during pre-season?
The outrage on everything.
Fume.
Yeah.
The fume.
Yeah.
That we're not allowed to talk about that anymore. No, but it is.
The way they fume.
Yeah. No, but even right, Skirtle and Lovren and Sacco and Torre, right? The meltdown that went on about Skirtle and Lovren playing in the second half. And Colo and Sacco play. That's it. Sacco's the 28th choice centre back of the club. This is a disgrace.
I heard Andre Wisdom's in ahead of him.
Brendan hasn't a bleeding clue. They're playing against some Pepsi Cola 11, and I can't believe he's not starting Sacco and Skirtle. This is rubbish. They should be playing Ilori and Sacco because the rest of them are all shy. Fuck them out.
Stefan Henshaw should be tortured. There's a lot of bollocks it is.
Well, I tell you, I'll pick my one, and unfortunately, Dave tipped on it earlier on. It's all the Liverpool fans saying, fuck Sterling anyway. Oyeb is better than him. Oyeb is defo better than him. I know he's unbelievable, Oyeb is. I saw Oyeb. And they call him Oyeb. People who think that Oyeb is going to be better than Sterling, call him Oyeb. I saw Oyeb twice on Match of the Day, and he is definitely going to be better than Sterling with his no goals and his, and his very little end product so far. He's definitely going to be better. And I'm just like, fuck off. You know what I mean? It's infuriating listening to them. Yes, he may be an excellent player. Raheem Sterling has produced on a reasonably consistent basis. and that's why people are paying 49 million for
him. I think a lot of people are more impressed with Ibe's attitude.
Mm. Of course they are. But you know what? I'm sure Ricky Lambert has a fucking great attitude.
Maybe what they're trying to say is when Sterling first broke into the team, he hardly lit the world on fire. Yeah. So they're sort of equating where Sterling is now to Ibe just breaking into the team. And maybe the same type of potential what they're seeing in Sterling back then. Not like for like now.
But that's not what they're saying.
Right, okay.
I'm right, unfollow, 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 unfollow
You're only a cunt anyway. If you see those words, you know it was me.
A nice little picture himself and King okay. Kenny at Melwood. I can be King.
At Josiah Villa asks, why do LFC only sign players with abnormally large heads?
I don't know. It is a fascinating thing. We do like to sign massive head players.
Yeah, I can't believe our own Damo Flood hasn't got a contract with
him. I was looking at, did you see when Milner hit his face under the ground? I'm like, the whole pitch is going to have to be relayed. He took about 7 kilos of turf up in his cheeks. picking
his ears.
It's some jaw, isn't it? If ever a head was made for Batman, it's James Milner. It's just a jaw.
He's got a jaw of a desperate Dan. Yeah.
Lambert, obviously.
Have you seen the size of Ings' head?
Firmino's head.
Have you seen the pictures? Firmino looks like somebody who's an alien.
Yeah, but he has the body of an 11-year-old.
That's an alien.
He has the body of an 11-year-old boy. So he just has a normal head and a tiny body.
His head goes.
Yeah, his forehead is about 3 feet long.
It is. Check it out.
Like he's like the Brazilian Rihanna. Yeah. A forehead that goes to his neck.
Yeah. Wakes up in the morning, doesn't know when to stop washing his face.
He doesn't know whether he's washing his head or what.
He has toothpaste behind his ears and all the
Okay, at Fizzy Benlin asks, if you had to replace the real flavour of smoky bacon, steak or chicken with crisp equivalent, which do you choose?
Will you run that by me again?
That was a bit confused.
Afizzy Benlin asks, if you had to replace the real flavour of smoky bacon, steak or chicken with crisp.
With a crisp equivalent. So you had to replace. Okay. You can't eat chicken anymore, you have to eat chicken crisps. Or you can't have bacon anymore, you have to have smoky bacon
or
crisps.
If you decide to have a lump of cheese with an onion on it, no, you have to eat cheese and onion crisps instead, is it? All right.
So steak... The look of utter disdain from Brenzy is magic. Surely it has to be crispy bacon or streaky bacon, because the whole reason you make that is to make it crispy so you can add it to a sandwich or something else. So you put your smoky bacon crisps on with chicken on a sambo. That's going to be fucking tasty. In fact, I'd eat that right now. I'm not going to lie to you. Right? I don't want steak crisps. I don't want chicken crisps. I want smoky bacon crisps. If only somebody made smoky bacon crisps.
So basically you want the chicken sandwich with smoky bacon crisps.
Yeah.
But if you had to replace the real world equivalent, so you have to replace it with crisps, you can't have it anymore.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I'm happy to give up streaky bacon crisps. In all the things that I've used streaky bacon in, I'm fairly confident I could bang crisps in there in most of them. Apart from the egg sandwich, maybe. That might be a bit But
some crisps in the oven.
Crisps and egg sandwich?
I might give it a go at the weekend.
How would you wrap a chicken breast in crisps?
Oh. You wouldn't. You'd put pancetta instead.
Well, if you hadn't got pancetta.
Then you'd fucking just eat the chicken. You'd stop being a pretentious cunt.
Just get on with it.
I used up my taking silly questions seriously when I was considering scooping shit out of me. I sat down, so I'll sit this one out.
Okay, let's run through our admin towards the end. Firstly, a massive thanks to the Corkonian in Cologne, Vinny and the boys there, for looking after Phil so well and sending him back about as good as we could expect him to be. On top of that, we'd like to announce that we will be doing a live podcast
podcast from the Cork Onion in October, probably late October. Stay tuned with us for more details on that as we'll release them nearer the date, and hopefully some people can come along and have a listen to us. As always, a big thanks to the Astro Park here in Talla for looking after us and hosting us on a constant basis. You're a number one spot for five and imaginary seven-a-side needs. Stop laughing.
Go.
Your trippers tonight were Paul Brennan, we had Dave O'Connell, we had Ray Brady, Phil Casey, as always, and myself, Steve O'Daly. Thanks. Okay.
No, you don't. Your day trippers tonight were...
Yeah. What's Dave's surname?
O'Connell.
Okay, so sorry, you had...
Paul Brennan.
I know Paul Brennan, for fuck's sake. Ray fucking...
Brady.
Okay. Your trippers tonight were... Where Eminem,
M&S,
Big Daddy Scoop. Oh, fuck, you're right. Let's go. We got to give it a bit of time so you can edit.
Go.
Your trippers tonight were Paul Brennan. Fuck off with you, because I keep thinking you were Paulie B, and I'm looking over and can see him laughing his whole off at me. Oh, what a cunt. If this was me, I'd be pissing myself at somebody else. Your trippers tonight were Paul Brennan, Dave, I can't remember his surname. Dave Roberts.
Dave O'Connell.
Don't know.
Close enough. Say Dave Roberts. Go.
Your trippers tonight were... Okay. No, I gotta get it together.
Whew. 3, 2, 1.
Your trippers tonight.
It's not that fucking hard.
I know, I'm laughing. I can't stop laughing. Okay. Okay, let's go.
Go.
Your trippers tonight were Paul Brenzy Brennan. I forgot Dave's name again. O'Connell or O'Connor?
O'Connell.
Okay, Daniel O'Connell. Yeah, good job.
Dave O'Connell, not Daniel O'Connell.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, great.
Your trippers tonight were Paul Brenzy Brennan.
Wemba.
Oh, fucking, here we go. Okay.